Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, and welcome to a special Between Takes episode of Missing Frames. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. Normally on this show, we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives, but every so often we like to give you something special. We like to throw you a curveball to make sure you're paying attention and you're actually actively listening to what's happening. So you may or may not have heard of this movie called The Climb, which is coming out this weekend, and it's directed by Michael Covino, and it was co-written by him and his friend Kyle Marvin, and the two of them also star in the film. So I saw this film back at Sundance, and I thought it was so funny. It's basically kind of a weird take on the bromance, almost a dismantling of the genre. And it focuses on these two guys, Michael and Kyle. That's right, they are playing not themselves, but the characters' names are their names. And Michael and Kyle have been friends for years and years. They're on a bike ride, just trekking up a mountain, and Kyle's about to get married, and Michael reveals that he's slept with Kyle's fiance. And this opening scene, which, by the way, is all done in a single take, I think it's like 10, 15 minutes. It's extremely impressive. And each scene in the film is also done in a single take, because why not? It's amazing and it's incredible, but it feels really organic. It doesn't feel like they're showing off. That's something I talk about with Michael about his direction, how he manages to make it feel really organic and not showy like some one-shot films are. But this opening scene kind of sets the stage for the dynamics of this relationship. These guys have a very, again, I don't want to spoil anything, but we kind of follow their friendship through the years and all the different ins and outs of it and the ups and downs. And it's very funny. It's dark. It's kind of twisted, but it's very effective. And I had a really great time chatting with Michael and Kyle about it. So a few things we talk about. First of all, this was recorded, this interview, back in February or March, like before COVID happened. So they were promoting the film's release back in March before COVID delayed it all the way to now, November. But I talk with them about how the two of them met and became friends. We talk about how The Climb started as a short and it premiered at Sundance and it did really well there, and they were able to expand it into a feature, and some of the challenges that come with expanding a short into a feature. We also talk about some of the most challenging one-ers, which is a single take of a scene. And there's some really great stories, some really fun times. Again, this movie is going to be out. I think it's getting a limited release. Keep your eyes peeled for when it comes to VOD. It's definitely worth your time. It's extremely funny. It's kind of moving, again, in a weird, twisted way. But Michael Covino and Kyle Marvin are just awesome talents. I can't wait to see what they do next, and I hope you enjoy listening.
Now available to own on video cassette.
Gentlemen, for the people at home, go ahead and introduce yourself so they recognize your beautiful voices.
Hi, I'm Michael Covino.
And I am Kyle Marvin.
And we are all here to talk about this little movie called The Climb, which, by the way, I saw at Sundance, and it's fantastic.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We're off to a good start with this interview.
This is good. So the most important question, and this will determine how the rest of this interview goes, did you guys ride your bikes to this interview?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, we did.
I got nervous for a second. I was like, oh, no, we did.
Probably getting stolen.
My wheel's probably gone.
It's all right. It was all worth it, though. So when did you guys meet? Do you remember what cemented your friendship where you were like, this guy, I'm going to stick with this guy for a while?
Yeah, I mean, we met on a commercial in New York, and I asked a fellow producer, I was like, hey, who do you know who's crazy enough to just walk up to strangers on camera and convince them to participate in this commercial? And they're like, this one guy, Mike Covino. As soon as I met him, I knew. that I could do that particular function. And then it took a couple of years for me to actually realize I liked him as a human being.
And Mike, I assume you felt the same way.
Yeah, I liked him. I helped him move, and I think that's when we became friends. I don't usually do that with people, but, you know, he was like, I was like, you want to hang out on Saturday? He's like, oh, I'm moving. I was like, oh, I'll help you move. I haven't done that for anyone in quite some time, so it was a signal that we had a blossoming friendship.
You were
in a mattress through a small doorway with someone else. You guys got something.
And I heard from you, actually, Mike, watching other interviews about this. So this idea came, you were riding your bike, you were thinking about an ex-girlfriend, or you just learned that an ex-girlfriend was now with a friend of yours, and that's what sparked the whole idea for the climb?
Yeah, I think, it hadn't just happened, but it was certainly like something I was contemplating, like that situation and that idea. I thought a very interesting situation to explore revealing on a bike ride, and that became kind of the impetus for, can we find comedy in this, and can we write something that would be compelling?
And of course, it started as a short. And did you guys, what was the major breakthrough when you were expanding to the feature? Was there a particular scene where you were like, okay, let's go in this direction?
I think what we tried to explore, we basically took this as a jumping off point and tried to explore, okay, where would we want to go next to these characters? We loved the characters. We loved their relationship and the sort of awkward understanding of the short. And they're like, okay, good. Where could we then put this friendship, where could we take it? And I think that was mostly the thing we were concentrating on, less than the scenes, but like what kind of pressures could we put on this friendship beyond this almost near catastrophic pressure at the beginning.
I'm sure there were some challenges here, because this friendship is not necessarily the conventional bromance where everyone, they kind of get along and they help each other through. There's some toxic elements to it. So what were some of the challenges? Were you guys concerned at all about like, oh man, are we pushing this too far? Should we go further? How did you keep that relationship endearing? Because what's weird about it is you're kind of like, this is sort of terrible, these things that Mike is doing, but you still kind of love the guy. Or at least I did. Maybe that just makes me a terrible person. But
just makes you a terrible person.
I thought so. Okay, good. I'm glad we've confirmed. People who like Mike are terrible. We just want to get that out there on the internet. But what did you guys, were you guys constantly talking about that, or were you just kind of like, let's just go with it and see what happens?
I think the thing that was guiding us through this was this, are the characters acting in earnest? Are they being truthful to themselves? Are the reasons why they're doing things understandable to us, and can we relate to that in some way? Like, you know, I think we all can relate to, in some degree, like selfish behavior, you know, maybe not in excess the way maybe Mike continues to, you know, act in the film, but certainly we've all done things in our lives that could constitute selfish behavior, or something that was acting in self-interest over the interest of maybe someone we love or we care about. And, you know, those relatable aspects of things, and as long as we understood the reasons behind why these characters are doing things, we weren't quite afraid to go to these places, because we thought, like, if we can understand it, we can empathize with it, then hopefully the audience will go on the journey, even if the characters aren't likable per se.
Right. How early did you decide? I know the short took place in a single take. How early did you decide you guys wanted to go for that for the entire film? And what were the challenges of doing that? Because there's a lot of talk. One of the things I've told people about this movie that impressed me the most is I feel like doing a one-er for a movie has kind of almost become a gimmick. We see that a lot now, and sometimes people are like, oh, it's so gimmicky. One of the things that impressed me about this movie is how organic it felt. And half the time, I am watching the movie and I'm so engaged that I'm forgetting the technical side of my brain is shut off, and I'm not. And I realize, like, oh my gosh, this is still a single take. How did you design those shots with that in mind, trying to avoid the gimmick of just showing off and allowing the performances and everything to sort of organically make it work?
Yeah, I think in some ways constraints breed real creativity, and I think giving ourselves the constraint of like these will all be ideally executed as single takes allowed us to sort of open up the ideas on how we could then explore it and how we could, use that tool of the long take to sort of inject interesting perspective and creativity into the scenes that we were writing.
Yeah, we were very aware of the potential, like, sort of gimmick nature of it, and I think we understood that if it ever began to felt like that for us, that we would step away from it or step back from it or find different solutions to things. I think, you know, again, it had more to do with the decisions we were making feel earnest and feel like the right decisions to us, and or did they feel, you know, like masturbatory and showy for the sake of being showy, because we wanted to show people how talented our Steadicam operator was, and
right,
like that.
But people need to know how talented he is.
He's very talented. They should know.
Now they do, but you know, I think, you know, to our cinematographer's credit, the conversations that we all had together were the thing that we sort of we fell back on to make sure that it didn't ever feel gimmicky, and that was really just what is the motivation for the camera and perspective and how are we, you know, moment to moment throughout the scene really justifying what we're doing and why we're doing it. And if it's not justified and it's not motivated, then we don't do it. And meaning, like, the camera doesn't move until we have an understanding of what that motivation is. And that, you know, operating within that, with those guidelines and understanding that was sort of the bar that we had to clear over and over again, really forced us to come up with creative solutions to that. Because there would be moments where we knew where we needed to get to with the camera with a certain part of the scene, but we had 2 minutes in between. And sometimes it was about reblocking and re-choreographing the scene and understanding what was motivating that. And then we were getting into character and redeveloping sort of the motivations for why the characters would do certain things. And so it all fed the overall narrative of the story. And it just, it what it ended up doing is adding layers to it. And we just developed it further and further.
I just want to make sure you know, Mike, you are a real director. In case nobody's told you, this is awesome.
No, no one's actually told me yet.
So, well, you're welcome.
Even I haven't told him that yet.
Kyle, you got to get on that. This guy needs your support. So, what were you guys the most proud of as far as the one-er you pulled off? Was there one in particular where you were like, I can't believe we did this?
For me, I think the Frozen Lake, maybe. I was the most proud of that one because it was the scariest for me.
Yeah. What about you, Mike?
You know, the opening scene on bikes was pretty tough. I think there was a lot of moving pieces. But the one I'm probably most proud of, or that it was a lot of heavy lifting, was both the Thanksgiving and Christmas scenes. Simply because they really ate up a big chunk of the movie, and they sort of had to flow together and keep the audience. Like, that was where we knew we could lose the audience if it wasn't engaging and entertaining and compelling and well crafted. And so it felt like the stakes were really high in that particular moment. You know, there were just a lot of also moving pieces and moving characters and a lot of things that had to happen and could have gone wrong.
How long did it take to rehearse or block something like that, like those scenes you described?
We had about one rehearsal day for each scene. So we would rehearse for a day and then we would shoot the following day.
Would you figure it all out on the day?
Pretty much. I mean, we had ideas coming into it, but there's a lot that we had to figure out once we were in the space. So we would block and rehearse the day before with their camera operator, with our entire crew, with really everyone there doing their jobs in the moment if they had cues and things that they needed to hit. And then we'd dial in the pace and the edit and really get the rhythm down. And then the following day we would go for performance.
And what has surprised you the most about people's reactions to this movie?
I would say for me, though, the biggest surprise has been the age and cultural differences all sort of having a unified appreciation of similar moments. For me, I think it's interesting when, you know, someone in their 70s and then their, like, 19-year-old daughter walk up to us at the end of a screening and are like, oh, my God, we love this, and are talking about sort of similar themes. And to me, that's been a big surprise to see, like, the spectrum. And then, you know, the French, we premiered at Cannes, obviously, so the French reaction and the German reaction, and it's been really interesting to sort of see the conversations from all different cultures and ages.
And was there ever a point where you really wanted to confuse people and have Mike play Kyle and Kyle play Mike?
I mean, we talked about that at the beginning of this whole thing. We talked about
Did you really?
Different characters. Yeah, yeah. We talked about each of us taking different roles, but I think for us, it felt like we both gravitated towards the roles that we ended up taking. We both sort of thought it'd be fun for, speaking selfishly, I thought my character would be fun to play.
What do you guys feel like the biggest lesson or the biggest learning experiences from this production? What are the biggest ones that you'll take with you for future projects?
Don't do a movie that's all long single page.
Because that's all anybody will ask about.
That and it's also a pain in the ass.
But I gotta say, you guys pulled it off in a way I thought was really, really impressive and very, again, organic to the story. And I want to make sure people hear that, because it's not just about the wonders. It's the fact that you guys did it and made it work from a storytelling perspective. That's the accomplishment, ladies and gentlemen, in case you're wondering. But what's next for you guys? Like, are you talking about other stuff, or are you just enjoying the ride right now and promoting the movie and going around and visiting different cities?
A little both. I think we're enjoying it, and we're trying to find time to finish writing our next movie. And we're just we're excited to get back into it and go make the next one. But I think we know kind of the undertaking that it is and the time commitment and all that. So I think we're not in a rush. We're taking our time to make sure that the story's there and the script there and everything is ready to go.
Well, I look forward to seeing it whenever it happens, and I hope you guys are really enjoying taking, because, I mean, the movie's getting really high praise, it feels like. That's got to be really awesome.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We definitely had the underwhelming experience of releasing films before, so not that we aren't proud of the films, but just, sort of like, you don't get the attention, and you don't get to have the conversations about it. So this is a real, lovely sort of surprise and fun ride that we're getting to go on right now.
Awesome. And then last question for both of you guys. I do a podcast called Missing Frames, where we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. What is the movie, both of you, that you know you need to see that you haven't seen yet?
I mean, I definitely have a list of all the movies I haven't seen. There's so many. I mean, I'm part of it. Just say a movie. Say a movie. I've never seen Boxcar Bertha. I've never seen The Conversation. There's a couple Sidney Lumet films I still haven't seen, which is kind of crazy because I'm obsessed with him as a filmmaker.
I haven't seen Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, it's pretty good.
Kyle, what about you? Any luck?
I was hoping you were going to skip me and then.
Never.
That's true. You've never seen it.
You're basically saying this whole podcast, my whole idea behind a podcast, is a sham, and I should just scrap it.
Yeah. No, I want to listen to your podcast because I want to listen. Have you ever seen Harold and Maude? I haven't seen Harold and Maude. Going. Have you ever seen Let the Right One In? No. There you go.
There it is.
I haven't seen Let the Right One In, and I really need to see it.
That's right. Gentlemen, congratulations again. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.